Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome to our critical Q&A for this week. Number 447 I have on the books here. Yep, looks like we're good. Let's get over to the chat screen so we can see everybody's comments as we're going along here. Yes, excellent. Hey, some of my critics here in the comments, so happy to see you. I'm sure those will appear up on the screen as we get going here. Yes, let's see what happens today. I don't know if y'all saw apostate Alex Barnes Ross's video the other day where he just sort of got a little fed up with things and decided to let loose for an evening. And I absolutely supported him in that. Alex has been receiving no end of nonsensical nonsense being directed in his direction by people who are absolutely lying about him and his work, and I am very put out by that. I support Alex immensely, completely, and totally in what he is doing. He is one of the few people in this space who is actually out in the real world doing the work. So, of course, people who can do nothing but sit around on YouTube complaining all day about other YouTubers have nothing positive to say about him, and I find that absolutely disgusting. And I wanted to put out a statement of support for him from my channel, from my end, while I am also receiving no end of shellacking, and the Aftermath board is also receiving no end of shellackings from people who can't do, they can only complain. And really, it creates a very easy to see divide between the adults and the children, and that's kind of my complaint about that. So I will simply say that and put that there. Now let's get back to answering real questions. Let me put the Q&A up here in the box so we get started with our official Q&A. Okay, as we always do, please put your questions below this comment so I can see and answer them. Start Q&A. All right, good. So you should see a comment just appear in the comment box there. Please put your questions below this comment so I can see and answer them. And please do that so that I can answer them. So if you have any questions for me at all for the Q&A, put them in the Q&A comment section. That's where I'm going to draw them from for the rest of the show. I'm going to answer a question that I have set up in the queue so that I can give you all time to find and put your questions in there. So let's go ahead and skip over to this other screen. Yeah. Okay, good. Here's the question. Let's get started. From Becky Vincent. I have had a question about drug use in Scientology. Previously, I can swear I saw a video or read that having a history of drug use with mind-altering drugs, think prescriptions, acid, marijuana, mushrooms, etc., made a person ineligible to use an e-meter. I'm wondering right now if I answered this last week or not. I might have addressed this question already. So can someone that was a drug user before Scientology even get up in their OT levels? I thought I read or heard that anyone with a history of using mind-altering drugs can join the Church of Scientology, but could never be audited on a meter. I am not sure if I answered this or not. I answered something very similar to this recently. Sorry, I've answered so many questions, but I threw this in the queue. Let me go ahead and address this. You can get up the OT levels in Scientology. You can do any Scientology of any kind, no matter what drugs you've had in the past, if you get okay for it. Recreational drugs, marijuana, heroin, meth, acid, mushrooms, all of that stuff does not forbid you from getting auditing in Scientology. If you take LSD, or as Hubbard put it, if you take LSD, quote, or any of its derivatives, you are not qualified to join the C organization, and they will not let you do that. But you can have dropped plenty of acid, taken plenty of, not acid. You could take meth, you could take mushrooms, you could take plenty of pot and still join the Sea Org. And you could definitely still get auditing. You just can't have taken any of those drugs within 24 hours of getting any auditing. And if you're, and really for the heavy stuff, it's going to be like a week or two dry out period, depending on your drug history. I met plenty of people in Scientology who have had plenty of drugs. Laundry list of drugs on their drug list, you know, as to what drugs they took, how often, and when. So, you can get, there are plenty of people who have done the OT levels who were potheads, acid heads, hippies, etc. Not a problem there. It's only comes into play when it comes to being eligible to join the C organization or to be audited, immediately, right? That kind of thing. Okay, so that's the answer on that question. I'm sorry that I would throw a question up there and then immediately I wonder if I already answered or not. That kind of silly of me. But that's that. As far as, so let's go ahead and get back to the question box here. Yeah, auditing on acid, what a trip that would be. I'll tell you, that would definitely be true. All right, so let's see what we've got here in the questions. I'll throw this one up to start. I can't see the whole question. I'm waiting for it to come up on the screen. There we go. Red Pill 3000, which Scientology derivative group like EST teaches stuff that is the closest to actual Scientology materials? Also, do you like Funyuns? I love Funyuns a lot. I eat them a lot. I haven't actually, now that you've asked me though, I haven't had them in months. Now I have a craving for Funyuns. But like those. Now, you know, it's funny you mention EST because that's the first place I would have gone. Earhart Seminar Training, EST, EST, is a cultish large group awareness training, LGAT is what we call it, LGAT, large group awareness training, sort of culty workshop seminar kind of outfit. That started in the 1970s. Werner Earhart took a bunch of Scientology materials and other materials. He was not like a years-long practicing Scientologist, as I understand it. I think he just cribbed from Hubbard's materials, as well as other stuff and his own stuff. And he kind of, you know, amalgamated it into his own little thing about how to empower yourself, how to find whatever it is that is, you know, ruining your life or is, you know, is not the thing that you need in your life and how to get rid of it. And, Joe DiCeppo, LGAT, like LGBT, but less fun. Yeah. That's a good one. So what I can, the reason that I jumped to EST, not because you put it in the question, but it's just because you kind of nailed it. Here's something that I was told that I have, I think I've said this before. EST, when the EST seminars, which, by the way, evolved into Landmark Forum, the Forum, you know, you might have heard of these things. That stuff kind of comes from the EST stuff. And this was so cribbed, this was so ripped off from Scientology that back in the day when they were first doing these things, before they revised and sort of reworked their materials themselves, they were actually using Scientology materials and the Scientology dictionaries in the EST seminars in order to clear up terminology and phrases that right from Hubbard that Earhart was taking. He went, oh yeah, well, we're going to take this bit and this bit and this bit, and we're going to throw it in there. And so we're going to use the Scientology Hubbard definitions for this. That's how much it was taken from there. So that's what I can say about that in terms of closest to actual Scientology material. You know, it was interesting because Keith Raniere took stuff from Scientology that was almost, I mean, word for word. I'm forgetting right now, unfortunately, as I sit here, exactly what it was he took. Yeah, but I remember reading very specific stuff that Hubbard, from Hubbard, that Keith Raniere was just repeating. Keith Raniere. I keep calling him Raniere. I always want to say it that way. I don't know why. Keith Raniere. Anyway, there you go. All right, let's move on here. Michael Jackson, what game systems do you have? I have a PS4, and I have Steam on my desktop PC. So I run games through Steam on my PC. So those are the game systems that I... Oh, and I have a Nintendo Switch. So I have games on there as well, which we plug into our TV. Those are the game systems we have, yeah. Okay, Murder Hornet, what's your opinion when you think Scientology will die? I think that it's going to depend an awful lot on the circumstances of moving forward, cultural, you know, sort of socioeconomic, governmental, legal, right? In other words, is Scientology going to get prosecuted out of existence? Is Scientology going to have to fade through its membership dying off? Is Scientology going to implode because David Miscavige is discovered to have some secret stash of, you know, child porn or something? Like, what is it that's going to bring it down? We don't know. And anything is possible. It's an international, global, criminal enterprise disguising itself as a religion and using cultic methods of influence, manipulation, and control to keep its con going so people don't inspect too closely what's actually going on. So how does something like that die? Well, I named three different ways. There are other ways it can happen as well. And I don't know which way is going to happen. Nobody does. And it's really hard to be able to predict this kind of thing because it depends on factors that aren't in play yet. You know, is some whistleblower going to come forward with video showing David Miscavige beating on people? Is some whistleblower going to come forward with some new tale of evidence-based tale this time of you know, abuse where they actually provide documentation? It's not just he said, she said, right? And this is no cut on those who have come out, you know, giving testimony and evidence. But, you know, when it's he said, she said, you're not going to bring the cult down with that. You can't, because you can't prosecute it, right? When Mike Rinder and Amy Scobie and Tom DeVock and all these people came out years ago and said, look, this guy beat on us. He did this. He did that. Law enforcement goes, okay, well, here's 20 affidavits from within the Church of Scientology saying you're the liar and David Miscavige never touched anybody. So law enforcement can't do anything with that. So we can choose to believe the testimonials, but that doesn't mean the police or judges or district attorneys can do anything with it. So we need tangible evidence. We need people to come out of this group with the evidence in hand. Hasn't happened yet. It's pretty unlikely to happen because the one thing cult members who are escaping a cult generally don't think about is bringing evidence out with them. It's incredibly frustrating. So, yeah. So, anyway, so that's kind of, you know, just some of the factors at play. But all of that being said, right, as to why it's impossible to come up with a straight, solid answer for when Scientology is going to die, you asked my opinion. So my opinion is that lacking any external prosecution or interference, I think Scientology has generations left in it before it dies off, in terms of if it were to just organically fade away, right, through second gens leaving and going away, and it gradually getting smaller and smaller and smaller, right? This, of course, depends an awful lot on David Miscavige and whether there is a successor to him, or if, you know, if he were to die and it all just imploded, wouldn't that be interesting? I've always assumed that somebody would step up within the organization and keep it going and maintain the functions. I don't think it just disappears when David Miscavige goes away, unless there's some key element or financial aspect of it that can't be turned over or succeeded or something, right? Or if there's some, like, something we don't know yet going on at the heart of it that would prevent somebody from taking it over. Wouldn't that be interesting? You know, some criminal operation or something that only David Miscavige could run, right? Or knows about in a way to run. You know, but doubtful, because if you look at a mafia model, mafia don't die off when the Don dies. Somebody steps up and takes over, right? It's a succession, even if it's a hostile takeover. So, you know, so I don't see it, you know, imploding that way. So I think it's going to take generations for it to, you know, just kind of fade away to nothing. It's a tiny little group. It's only going to get smaller as time rolls on if they keep operating the way that they are. The other variable at play here, by the way, is that somebody else could take over, or for some reason, Miscavige himself could have some kind of an epiphany and create a renaissance time for Scientology, where things get chiller and more mainstream and more mild, and they cut off, you know, they knock off the really weird culty stuff and figure out some way to market and sell themselves without all the weird space science fiction Xenu crap, right? But as I've said so many times before, that's just not in the nature. It's not within its nature to do that kind of thing. Generally, it will just, you know, slowly and steadily decrease and diminish until it's not there anymore, rather than actually make that kind of radical change to keep itself going. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I think about it. It's a very general loosey-goosey kind of idea in my own head as to how it ends. Because of all these factors that are at play. I'll tell you, just to be mildly snarky for a second here, I'll tell you how Scientology doesn't die. It won't die by protesters standing around outside of the churches of Scientology yelling obscenities and insulting the staff. That's not going to end anything. I guarantee you it's only going to continue it. And I am in support of good, solid, peaceful protesting, compassionate protesting, you could say, as opposed to hostile or antagonistic protesting, the kind Alex Barnes Ross does, the kind PTS for Life Jeff Beaumont does, that they've been making videos of. I support that kind of protesting. It'll be super clear. Yeah. Okay. So I will say that just to throw a little snark there. Okay. Let us carry on here. Jehovah's Witness apostate Chris, what percentage of Scientology is still either you? Do you think it always be with you permanently? Oh, okay. It's an interesting way of putting that. I guess you're asking, what are there parts of Scientology that are still inside of me, or still part of me, or still something that I'm going to carry on with for the rest of my life? One moment, please. I'm thinking, because I don't want to just say, well, nothing, unless that's actually the answer. I don't really see that I still have Scientology inside me. in terms of oh, actually, no. I mean, yeah, there's a couple things. Okay, yeah, there's a couple things. Okay, one, there's a principle that I learned early on in Scientology that I absolutely believe is true in almost. No, it's not true in almost all cases. It's not true in almost all cases, but it's true often enough that it's a useful principle to use in my life. And that is the idea that communication is the universal solvent, or that communication is a tool you can use to resolve and deal with conflict or disagreement or personal upsets between people. I believe communication can be used that way and is a key tool to use that way. Scientologically speaking, communication is the universal solvent. It dissolves all things, is what Hubbard says, right? Through communication alone, you can resolve any conflict, any point of hostility, any point of disagreement or conflict you can resolve with communication alone. I have come to learn that that is not true. When someone is unwilling to communicate with you and is unwilling to cease their hostility towards you, even when you approach them with a friendly, open, compassionate hand and heart, and you truly want to make peace and you truly want to resolve things, if they don't want to, there's nothing you can do about that. And it doesn't matter how good you are, how well-intentioned you are, how kind you are, how much you're seeing things from their point of view. It doesn't matter what you do. They are the problem in that situation, and they have to change in order to change that situation. No amount of communication coming out of my mouth is going to resolve it when somebody is sitting there insulting me to my face, calling me names, telling me what a low-life scumbag I am, and they just refuse to have any communication on the topic, right? They won't open up in any way. So I used to think, and I used to approach my life and other people and my relationships with the idea that I could bust through that 100% of the time if I just persisted and I just cared enough and I just put myself out there enough and I just kept, putting that communication out there, right? And I used this concept of the ARC triangle from Scientology, where I just keep demonstrating affinity and making myself real to the person, and the communication will fall into place and everything will work out. And I'm going to say that there were some real problems and issues that I've had with people in my life that, because I acted that way, I did resolve it. We did work it out, and things got better. So it's not that it doesn't work, but you have to have some degree of willingness from the other side, or it's not on you, it's on them. And this was something that I needed to find out about, at least as far as I'm concerned, that communication's not always going to be the universal solvent. And it's not my fault or my bad or my lack of responsibility that is creating that situation. It's the other person. So that's I guess I'm talking around this idea that I used to have as a core principle of what I thought integrity and responsibility were. For myself, I defined my own integrity and my own level of responsibility by how persistent and how willing I was to try to work things out with people. And it took a great many failures to do that before it kind of hit me that it wasn't on me, right? And that in a way is just another Scientology mind trap, right? That you can always take enough responsibility and have enough determinism, what they call in Scientology, pan-determinism, right? You have self-determinism, and then you have pan-determinism in Scientology, where self-determinism is you are fully responsible in determining yourself and your own actions and words and thoughts. Pan-determinism is where you become kind of a godlike figure, where you're determining or running other people as well as yourself. You're being fully, you know, you're the one in charge of the whole thing. And that's a fantasy. That's a delusion. Nobody is pan-determined. You're not God, right? Neither am, and nor am I. You don't get to tell other people or spiritually, you know, intend other people to do things, and then they just become little robots and do it because you intend it, right? But this is sort of this idea that Hubbard puts forward. So this, you know, you can see there's a lot here. I'm talking about very basic Scientology stuff that goes deep into a person when they're around Scientology for a long time, you know, and this stayed with me for a very, very long time. But I think that part is changing now, right? That recognition of, yeah, that's not going to work out so good, right? Yeah, sign off emails with ML. Much love. Pete Jensen puts in the comments there. Yeah, we used to sign all of our dispatches and communications with ML rather than sincerely or, you know, best to you or good wishes or whatever. It was ML for much love. Yeah. Okay. So let's see if there's anything else to answer on this question before I leave it here. In terms of deep stuff, I got rid of the misunderstood word stuff a long time ago. I'm not all hung up on words and dictionaries and all that anymore. That was a little tough one to let go of too. So as far as permanent stuff, trying to think of other Scientology. I mean, even my concepts and ideas about spirituality and spirits and thetans and the sort of the model of the afterlife that Scientology presents, right? That you're going to die, but you're this spiritual entity who's going to live on, and you are this singular unit. You are not part of everybody else. You're not going to merge with everybody else. There's no great big cluster of all of us, you know, now or in the future. You are you, and you're always going to be you, right? That kind of model of spirituality is no longer really part of my thinking anymore. As far as like how I have to think about spirituality, for a long time, I was really stuck in that model until somebody asked me this question one time or pointed out this thing about, you know, well, who said spirituality had to have spirits? Oh, did that throw me? Oh, that was a good one. I love it when stuff like that happens. Really blows my mind. Like, wait a minute, what? What do you mean? There have to be spirits, right? Otherwise, how could you have spirituality? Oh, that threw me. So that was great. Okay, so I'm probably lingering on this one too much because I really don't have an answer. I'm telling you things I've stripped away or gotten rid of. I don't know if I'm still holding on to Scientology stuff. If I am, it's not something I'm aware of. You know, this is the stuff I was just talking about is pretty much the most basic stuff I've dug up out of those onion layers, you know, as well as, of course, all that, you know, save the world crap and the other stuff. Okay. So let's carry on. And by the way, guys, I've got two more questions in the queue here. So if you have more questions for me, throw them under the comment section, under that comment there. Please put your questions below this comment so I can see and answer them. All right. Let's carry on here. Xion asks, do you have a topic you'd like to say something about, Chris? I will say this. In the mood that I am in today, I am very frustrated by the fact that the YouTube world is a world where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And that's very, very, very wrong. It really sucks. If you don't want to be a drama channel and you don't want to dive down the the sewers and into the mud of drama, then people abandon you so quickly, right? Which I find, I was shocked by it. I really was. Because I thought I was fostering a community of people who were interested in learning and education and growth and healing and you know, and getting past their trauma, not wallowing in it or using it as a status symbol. And I was shocked by that when that all started blowing up. And then to be personally attacked online by those same people who I've had on my shows, who I have, you know, broken bread with in the past and that kind of thing. And then to have them viciously and repeatedly attack me over things I never even meant or said or did. I mean, it was really, really, really out of the Twilight Zone. And if I don't respond to it and take the high road, which is what I've been trying to do this entire time, right, is just ignore it, move on, get my work done, you are abandoned, right? A bunch of people just abandon you. Just, oh, well, you're useless because you're not going to engage in any of that drama and you're not going to answer those accusations and this kind of nonsense, right? Where you have to now have, you know, legal battles in the court of public opinion, which no one ever wins, you know? And I find that very, very exhausting and sort of, you know, like defeating. It feels very like, it, you know, it's really... There's a lot of negativity connected with that. So that makes it hard, right? Because then if you, you know, so you don't want to engage with it and you take the high road and you get, you know, the responses that you get from that. And I very, very much appreciate my viewership and you guys for sticking with me through all of this and being people who are interested in what I'm trying to do here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. But it, boy, is it shocking how quickly people will turn on you for nothing at all, right? You're just kind of doing your thing, living your life. And some other people are over there trashing your name and your reputation and your credibility. And people just believe them. It's just absolutely horrifying to watch. So that's all I'm going to comment on about that, right? Is that's all I really want to say about it, is it's just, it's very frustrating as somebody who's trying to help and is trying to spend my life dedicated into the service of other people, even now, boy, that is just, it's amazing to watch and incredibly disappointing, incredibly so. So that's what I'll say. Okay, good. Still trying to keep it drama free, right? I'm not, because I just don't. Let me just say this last thing, and then I'll move on. I don't understand how this space, how this trauma community of people who are trying to heal, find it at all useful, or how an audience at all finds it entertaining to watch creators tear each other apart. I am mystified by how that has appeal and draw to anyone, much less that the majority of people in this space are over watching that and cheering it on and riling it on and riling it up. I can't understand that. I don't want to understand that. Maybe that's one reason why I can't, because I find it so gross that it's happening in this space at all, that we're so viciously attacking one another that there is no healing possible in a space like that, right? And then grifters come into this space and start selling pseudoscience and people glom onto it and attack anybody who doesn't, you know, go for it or support it, you know, this kind of these cults of personality that build up in this space. It's horrifying to me. What are you going to do? Carry on. That's what you're going to do. That's what I'm going to do. But I wanted to comment on that. Okay. Let's carry on. Jehovah's Witness apostate. Were your parents upset they spent a lot of money in Scientology without getting it back? No, my parents have never ever complained about the money that they spent in Scientology. Now, I'm not saying that they're happy about it, but they've never once complained about it. And there was a very pivotal conversation that I had with my mom in high when I was in high school, before I actually got on board, just before, actually, just a few months before, I got on board and started doing classwork at the Santa Barbara Church. I confronted my mom. I went and talked to her one day because I'd been hearing about it in school. I'd been having my friends go, man, what are your parents wasting all that money in Scientology? It's a cult. Don't you get it? And this is back in the 80s before anybody really knew a whole lot, right? Before there was any internet, people still knew. I mean, they, you know, there was Reader's Digest articles and there were Time Magazine articles and newspaper articles here and there that would crop up and people heard. I remember a 60 Minutes story. That Heber was in, and boy, did they look crazy. So people knew, or some people knew, and I would get some teasing about this in school. So one day I confronted my mom on it, and I was like, you know, it seems like you guys using this as a crutch, and it seems like, you know, you're spending all this money. We could have more money for things. And my mom, you know, she wasn't mad. She wasn't mad. She wasn't angry. She had a kind of, okay, all right, you're going to come at me with this. Well, let me tell you. One, it's my money, not yours, and I'll spend it how I want. And two, you've never wanted for anything. You've always had clothes on your back, food, shelter, everything that, you know, all the responsibilities that we have as parents are being well and adequately fulfilled when it comes to you and your brother. You have nothing to complain about. Which I was like, oh, right, on the spot. And then she's like, and so, yes, we spend money on Scientology because we believe that it is helping us. You might think of it as a crutch. We see it differently. And it's something that we want to do. And yes, we spend an awful lot, you know, not, she didn't say an awful lot of money, but she said, yeah, we spend money on it. It's our money to spend. And it was kind of one of those little just light slaps, right? It's just kind of, hey, you know, you can come at me with this, but I'm not here for it. You know, it's kind of my mom's attitude about it. And she was so chill and so matter of fact about it that it really put me in my place. I was like, damn. Because it wasn't a conversation about how Scientology was a cult. It was a conversation about how much money they were spending on it and that I was upset about this, right? And she was not having it. So, anyway, it was interesting. It was very interesting how she put me in my place there. And that's the only real time that the reason that comes to mind for me is that was the only real time when my mom and I, or my parents and I, actually had a conversation about Scientology and money. So I guess that's why my mind went straight to that. Yeah. I imagine at this point they're not exactly thrilled about having spent all that money, but my mom and dad are not regretful people. And frankly, you know, neither am I when it comes to that. I mean, it's part of who we are and our background and story and the, you know, that's how it is. So, yeah, so not a lot of regret on that or upset over that. Okay. Oh, look at all these questions dumping into the queue here. All right. Let us carry on. Rhyme and reason. How soon after joining Scientology as a public member will you start being recruited for the Sea Org? I assume soon with such low numbers these days. Do recruiters check PC folders for eligibility? Great questions. So not very long. As soon as what they're looking for, the ideal candidate for a Sea Org recruit prospect is relatively new. But not fresh off the street new. You want somebody who has had the cognition, air quotes, the cognition, meaning they have come to realize, they've had their epiphany that Scientology is the only answer, right? It's the only thing that's going to save the world. It's going to make a difference. It's going to turn the tide. That's going to solve war, solve illiteracy, solve crime. Nothing else out there. no government situation, no NGO program, no nonprofit. No one else is going to deal with this. Scientology is the thing that the world needs. That's the cognition. And that's not the only people they'll go after. I'm saying that's the ideal person they'll go after. They will try to, you know, sort of force that cognition on people, you know, brief them, talk to them, draw out, you know, what do they like about Scientology, that kind of thing. But they're looking for people who have had that realization or that thought. And then they play on it and reinforce it and build it up and try their hardest to play on that to get the person leveraged into the C organization, usually by pushing their responsibility buttons. Well, you know about this. You know this is the only thing that's going to do anything. So it's really your responsibility to join the C org, right? Nobody said it was going to be fun or pleasant. But it's what we got to do, right? Right? It's kind of the, you know, that Matrix briefing, right? It's like, hey, I didn't tell you it was, you know, I didn't say you were going to like it. I just told you it would be the truth. Right? Red pill. So that is, yeah, so that's what they're looking for, right? That kind of thing. There are other people who sell the Sea Org in other ways that I am not necessarily as familiar with, because that was really the way we did it, and that the way I was sort of trained to do it was leverage people into the Sea Org. You don't recruit people into the Sea Org to have fun, to have a good time. It's going to be great, right? There are some people I've heard who have tried to recruit people into the Sea Org that way. And of course, once they arrive in the EPF and in the Sea Org, they find out immediately it's not fun. They're not getting days off. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. And this is not really what they thought they were signing up for. And those guys tend to, you know, go out the back door. So, yeah. And yes, they will check PC folders for eligibility. They will check your background to make sure that you have not taken LSD or have any other unsavory aspects in your background that will prevent you from being in the Sea Org, like a criminal background or something like that, right? Yeah. Okay. Let's carry on here. Okay. Xcyan. I really enjoyed your podcast you posted yesterday with Arthur Goldwag about the politics of fear. Do you plan more educational podcasts like that? Hell yes, I do. Great. I'm really glad you enjoyed that. Arthur was just a blast to talk to. I had not met him before then. We had literally met like 5 minutes before we hit record. And we had this really great talk. And I think he and I are really on the same page on a lot of stuff. He's written about Scientology and cults in the past. And so he and I definitely see eye to eye on these groups. And we talked pretty frankly about, you know, modern politics and ideology and the cults of that and how culty politics has gotten these days and that kind of stuff. And it's undeniable, guys. I'm not pointing fingers here. I'm just saying it is what it is. If you can't see that, I don't know what words to say. It's so obvious. It's like commenting on this fact that the sky is blue. It's like, we are in a really bad culty situation in this country right now. I hope people really see that for very clearly for what it is, right? We don't have politics. We've got cults of personality battling each other, and it's just absolutely ludicrous. It's so dumb that people reduce themselves to these tropes and stereotypes and make them mockeries of themselves and their own intelligence by glomming onto these personalities, these figures that don't care about them, never have, never will, and act like these people are savior figures. It's embarrassing to watch, really, you know, and from a certain point of view, you know, if you kind of just step back from it all. So anyway, we got to talk about stuff like that, not that, you know, blatantly or you know, but yeah, we got to talk about that stuff. I hope that we will have more talks like that. And I'm really looking forward to inviting more people like that into my space, into my channel, to talk, to have those more adult conversations about these topics. That's what I'm into. I think it's valuable stuff, personally. I think it's really valuable and educational stuff. I wish more people agreed with me about that. I'm a little disheartened by, you know, the sort of lowest common denominator brand of content that dominates. It's you know, anyway, you guys know where I'm coming from. So, yes, definitely going to have more of that. Okay, Young Matador. Hey, Chris. Synanon was once described as one of America's most dangerous / violent cults. If you already know of this cult, would you agree with this assessment? Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. Synanon was a drug rehab, community-based, pseudo-therapeutic cult, if I remember right, from the 1960s and 70s. And they, I think they shaved their heads, and they had a very culty vibe to them. And they put a snake in the mailbox of one of their most prominent critics in the 60s, I think this lawyer guy. Real dangerous culty stuff, right? You weaponize empaths. You take good, normal, compassionate people who have a problem or issue, like a drug issue or an addiction, and you get them on board with your program, and then you convince them that this is the only thing that could possibly ever help anybody because nothing else works, right? And it's so easy to make people think that. I don't know why, but it is. And they'll do anything for you. They will kill other people in the name of the goodness of this group, you know? They just lose their damn minds. And that's cults. And that's Synanon. Absolutely, that's Synanon. And it fell apart. Nobody is mourning the loss of Synanon. Let's put it that way. Oswald Spengler, know anything about Gabor Mate dealing with Landmark Foundation? I do not. I don't know anything about that. I don't know who Gabor Mate is or what that's about. Okay. Jehovah's Witness apostate. I love these questions. These are so. Do staff members in orgs get fed by the org, or must they buy their own food during lunchtime? They do not get fed by the org. Until ideal orgs came around, there weren't even, you know, standardized food service or cafe facilities in orgs. Right now there are, but they're not really catering for the staff, although I'm pretty sure the staff are the main customers of those cafes, to be honest with you. But no, they have to go get their own food or bring their own food. The orgs do not feed their staff. The Sea Org feeds the crew. They have a galley situation or setup. Every Sea Org base does. And they purchase raw foods and prepare and cook, you know, and all that, and feed their crew. Yeah, that's how that happens. Okay. Oswald Spengler, in all caps, is the Institute of Noetic Sciences a cult? Well, let's find out. I've never even heard of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Let's see what this is about. Consciousness and noetics. Learn about humanity's inherent interconnectedness and the inner wisdom common to us all. Well, we're starting on the right foot, aren't we? Let's see here. Make a gift today. Oh, it's called the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or IONS, I-O-N-S. Nonprofit research center and direct experience lab specializing in... Oh, it changed the screen on me already. There is more to this world in you than meets the eye. Inspired by a profound experience of personal discovery, Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell created IONS in 1973 to explore the interplay between scientific knowledge and inner knowing. How interesting. Well, it has some certain earmarks of pseudoscientific stuff, but I don't know yet whether that's a cult or not. I'm sorry, I cannot answer that question right now. I'll have to look more deeply into that. You should send me an email to remind me about that. And maybe that's a maybe that's something we should do a show about. Okay, XScion asks, when a Scientologist makes mistakes, is it automatically assumed that there is an SP in that area? Yes, it is assumed. Because Hubbard wrote a bulletin called PTSness and Mistakes. That's the name of the bulletin. It's very short. And he said when somebody is PTS, they will make mistakes. When somebody is making mistakes, look and check and see if they are PTS. So, yeah, that is exactly right. There must be some SP throwing them out of present time, causing them to be out of valence, and acting not themselves. And so therefore they fumble, bumble around and have accidents and mistakes and can injure themselves or others in the process. This is what it means to be PTS in Scientology, right? It means you're connected to some bad SP. All right. Okay, Red Pill 3000, what do you think about the Puff Daddy raids and accusations? Also, what did you think was the most absurd crap about Scientology while you were in the Scientology? Okay, good, two for here. So, number one, I do not have an opinion about Puff Daddy, Diddy, whoever it was who got raided and is having accusations of sexual impropriety. I believe that that will all come out in court, and when it does, I will be tuned in and watching the facts. Right now, it's accusations, and he said, she said, and that sort of thing, and I just expressed earlier today my feelings about the court of public opinion. You know, it's the court where everybody loses. And so I haven't dived into the news media reports about this because I know they're only going to be salacious, sensationalistic nonsense. And I know that false accusations are just as easy to make as real accusations. So it is not yet known. I don't have all the data, and I'm not jumping on a bandwagon to make a judgment about that. Right. Let's see. Let's get all the facts out. Let's get the testimony out, and let's see. That's where I'm coming from on that. I'm not saying he did it. I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm saying I have no opinion. As far as the most absurd crap about Scientology while I was in, it's a good question. That's a really good question. The first thing that's coming to my mind that really, really used to bug me all the damn time were KRs, were knowledge reports. The report, the snitch system of Scientology was oppressive and so annoying. And I was the kind of guy who, and I'm not proud of this, but I am the kind of guy who would get such a tizzy about it. When I would have reports written on me, I would counter report on the person, right? Oh, you're going to dish on me? Well, I'm going to dish on you, motherfucker, right? Oh, okay. And sometimes I'd be so pissed off at this person for what I considered to be such an inconsequential bullshit report that I would copy the style that they wrote their report in of me right back at them, right? And I know I was not alone in this. I mean, shit, Hubbard talked about KR wars in policies, right? And how you could have these chit wars. Oh, you're going to chit me? Well, I'm going to chit you back and forth and back and forth, right? Chit was another name for knowledge report or for a written report. So yeah, I got, you know, down and dirty like that when I was in Scientology because I always felt it was so unfair that I'd be written up for this stuff. And it wasn't just the fact that a report was written. It was the danger of what's going to happen with this report, right? The second my stats are down or the second some senior is pissed off at me, here comes the ethics officer. Oh, it looks like you've been up to blah, blah, blah. What's up with this, Chris? And now you got to go through this whole rigmarole and this whole ethics thing, and you got to do conditions again. Oh, that was the other thing. That was another thing that was really absurd about Scientology every week were these goddamn weekly condition formulas you had to do every week. And it just became like on Thursday, right? You had to write your battle plan and your condition formula. And it wasn't, I didn't have a problem with a battle plan. You know, I'm on a job, I've got a list of things I got to get done. I've got projects I'm in the middle of. I've got stuff going. Sure, I'm going to write it down. It helps me organize my thoughts and I can understand where I'm going. But I had to write it down, formatted according to these condition formulas. And it was just such a useless admin exercise. It was just a trivial bit of nonsense that we had to conform with every week that after enough years of it, you really realized it didn't matter. It didn't make any difference what condition you were applying, right? Here are my air quotes again. And by this, I mean, if you're not familiar with what I mean, is every Thursday at 2 o'clock, your week ends and you report your statistics for the week, your totals of what you produced. And based on whether this statistic is up or down or level, determines what condition, quote unquote, you're in. And often it was emergency or danger, right? The line was flat or it was down a little bit or it was down a lot. And if it was up, it was affluence, right? Oh, affluence. Okay, here we go with affluence. You know, writing that formula up wasn't any different than writing up the danger formula. That it was steps you had to align everything to that didn't really do anything or mean anything. Bypass habits and normal routines is the first step of danger. Find out what you're doing that's out ethics and use self-discipline to correct it and get honest and straight, right? In other words, no matter who you are or what you're doing, if your statistic goes down from 1 week to the next and you're in danger, you are out ethics. Just like that. You're out ethics. Find out what you're doing that is out ethics and use self-discipline to correct it and get honest and straight, quote unquote. That's the exact step of the danger formula that you need to do as part of the formula, right? And I have to sit there and figure and waffle around. Well, what's my out ethics? Oh, I need to work a little harder this week. Oh, I slacked off a little bit. You know, whatever this bullshit you have to come up with, it doesn't mean anything. It didn't contribute in any way. It didn't help in any way. It was just this formulaic bullshit. And I knew it when I was in, and I hated it, right? I hated it. So, yeah, that was it. Yeah, that's a lot of shit. That's right. That's right. All right. Oh, X-Sion, any further thoughts or comments about your dive into politics? Oh, boy. Well, since you ask. Ah. I think that politics are crazy. I think politics have gotten insane in the United States, right? When you can't talk sense anymore about something without, you know, people coming and ripping your face off and calling you the most, I mean, really atrocious stuff, right? That's bad enough. But what I lament, here's what I'll say that I think is useful and maybe, you know, somewhat intelligent. I think it really sucks that the quality of the leadership in the United States has been dumbed down to the lowest common denominator where it's reality TV. It's more like reality politics now than it is, you know, it's real presidential candidates of the United States, right? You know, it's DC Shore. It's like the Kardashians. It's dumbed down, untrue, ridiculous corn and games. You know, go back to Rome, right? I mean, that's what our political discourse is amongst the general population. And it's so, and in the media especially, right? How it's presented to us is so dumbed down that you struggle to find, you know, good discourse, and by good I mean reasoned, rational discourse that isn't so partisan on one side or the other that it misses the boat entirely. Because the fact of the matter is, and this is what I wish people could see, there's truth on all ends of this stuff, right? There are people who have valid points on the left and the right. Not all the points. Some of the points are outlandishly stupid and insane. I'm not talking about the extreme ends. I'm talking about the stuff more in the middle, right? We can have rational conversations about financial and economic policies. Who's having those conversations in modern media discourse, right? On the major media, I don't see it. Stuff like that, right? I'm lamenting the fact that politics has been dumbed down to such a degree that it really is the age of cults of personality ruling the airwaves. And I think that's really sad because I think we could be doing so much better. And I wish we could. Yeah, that could be. That's an interesting comment, Harley 1151. I'm seeing some of the comments as I'm going through the questions here. Okay, let's carry on here with the question. Oh, we got a lot of questions. And we are already an hour into this, and here we are. So let's go into flash answer mode and see how we're doing here. All right, yeah, let's do that. Let's see if I can't power through some of these questions. X-Cyan, I'm going to anonymously send some Aftermath Foundation cards to a high school friend that is an OT and moved to Florida. Do you think it's worth the postage stamp? Yes, I do. Go for it. I'm not sure if the envelope that you're sending, he's going to know it was you. So maybe something to think about is don't burn that bridge necessarily if you don't need to. Because if he knows that comes from you, it's going to be end of story for you and that person to ever communicate again. But if you can, yeah, you said, oh yeah, I'm going to anonymously send. Yeah, go for it. Absolutely. Go for it. Can't hurt. OBG Foster, are there any holdover ideas or thinking habits you'd advise people who have recently left to work on or watch for? Yeah, hell yeah. Ego is the number one. Oh boy, is that a tough one though, because you're not prepared to listen. Ego is the toughest criticism to give somebody. Because you're criticizing the thing that's preventing them from hearing the criticism. I know I've been there myself, right? I know I've had people try to like, hey, Chris, you know, and it's like, ah, fuck off. So, you know, I totally, totally, totally understand that I'm not immune from this either. But boy, are our heads so huge when we get out of cults. It's a real dichotomy because you're swelled up ego-wise to epic proportions when you're in a cult. You're so full of the cult self. And yet the dichotomy or the sort of counterintuitiveness of it for the cult survivor is they feel ruined. They feel devastated. They feel so traumatized by the learning the truth of or whatever the moral conflict was that caused them to separate from the cult, which usually is what it is, right? Unless they just kick you out directly. There's usually so much angst and so much self-hatred or revilement or, you know, sort of degradation, right, of self. So these two things exist at the same time. And it's a weird thing that your ego is blown all out of proportion while at the same time you've never felt worse about yourself. I wish I had better words to explain that because I only see it very clearly in way hindsight. I couldn't see it at the time that it was happening. But I think that's a struggle that people have, is that ego battle, the fight to find meaning and purpose and value in yourself and your life after leaving a cult, leaving a coercive relationship or destructive situation like that. You know, it's so devastating to ourselves and our sense of self. But yet at the same time, we still have this inflated, puffed up, exaggerated sense of ourselves kind of below that. You know, it's this weird juxtaposition. I wish I had better, like I said, I wish I had better words. But that's a struggle. That was certainly a struggle for when you recently get out. It can take a lot of time to sort that out. A lot of introspection, counseling, that kind of stuff, I think, is required to really dig in on that. It's not readily apparent, and it's different from person to person, of course. Everybody's kind of got wildly different levels of this and different abilities to deal with it or even see it. So I'll say that. That's a struggle. And the proclivity toward us versus them thinking, right? The us versus them, the black and white sort of my way or the highway. If I say it, it's true. If you say it, not necessarily true, right? But if I say it, it is, right? That's a little bit of a holdover from the cult personality, leadership personality thing, right? That sort of personality swap that happens where cult members become, you know, sort of pseudo cult leaders themselves, personality-wise. They take on the attributes of the cult leader as their own personality. And part of that package is the us versus them of I'm so great and all of you suck. And so, you know, that's a struggle to overcome that. And then the last thing I'll say is another juxtaposition, another weird sort of thing is, so here you are all puffed up and us versus them and I'm right and everybody else is wrong. But at the same time, you have the struggle. Oh, I just lost the damn thought. Sorry, let me think about this for a second to get it back. I don't you hate it when that happens? You're sitting there, you're just, you know, I had this thought. It was right there. Had to do with the us versus them thing. I don't know. I'll probably remember it in a minute or two. I am so sorry. I hate it when that happens. Anyway, yeah, getting over the us versus them, the proclivity to it, right? The like, there's a sensitivity. Can take a little bit to get past that. That can be a struggle. That can be hard. That's all I got. Yeah, sorry. I wish I hadn't had that thought just completely vanish. Ooh, I hate it when that happens. Okay, carry on here. What? Ex-Scion, I'm going to Austin next week. Should I drop by the Ideal Org and not tell them who I am and mess with the staff for fun? I won't get too crazy, LOL. I mean, you know, do what you will. You know how I feel about messing with the staff. I don't think it's generally a good idea. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, have fun. Be kind. That's what I have to say. Be kind. You know, just remember that. Rhyme and reason. Did all Sea Org members attend all Scientology events in town when they happened? What about the RPF or just set them up, LOL? Okay. When major events are held, you're talking about like at the Shrine Auditorium or the Hollywood Palladium or wherever they hold the events, even if they hold them in the parking lot of the church in PAC in LA, right? The big blue buildings. Sea Org members are expected to attend. Event attendance is mandatory unless you have a job that specifically you are excused from going to the event. And very, very few people have those jobs. Maybe the galley staff or crew, the event production crew, certainly they're the people producing the event. They have to be on the job during the event. You might have certain people like the telex operators or the communication staff over in management orgs have to stay on post. Auditors sometimes are in session and have to stay on post, and so they might have to have an examiner or, you know, a director of processing or something running, you know, keeping things going. But generally, all Sea Org go to the events. It's mandatory attendance. Yeah, absolutely. RPF do not ever go to events. They're sequestered away from the rest of the crew. They see the event videos in the RPF space separately, but they do see the event. Absolutely. And they can watch it as many times as they want. Actually, we would get the DVD and it would just hang out in the RPF space sometimes. So sometimes we would see it once. Sometimes we could see him multiple times. Okay. Carry on here. Joe DiCeppo asks, how can we ban cults from recruiting at universities? Would have saved me a lot of trouble, possibly, though maybe not. If you value freedom of speech and the marketplace of ideas, then you will not ban cults on universities. You will educate university students about the dangers of cults and undue influence so that they are prepared for those conversations rather than banning them and trying to protect people from those conversations, because that doesn't really protect them. It only sets them up for failure later in life. We need to prep people by teaching them that predators exist, they are real, they are going to be run into, and here's what they look like, and here's what they sound like, and here are the red flags of coercive control. That's the only way that you can prevent the spread of it. That's the inoculation, right? That's your vaccine, is education and discipline. There isn't any other way to do it. That's my very strong opinion on that. Okay. Because I believe that universities, if there is any place in the world, if there is any location where the marketplace of ideas should be in full bloom and people should be having all the conversations, I don't care how hard they are to have, if there's a place where they should be happening, it is universities. And they should be happening across all the spectrums, right? Political, gender, social, all of it. That's where those things should be happening. Academies, institutions, universities, places of learning, that's where learning should be happening. All kinds of learning about all kinds of things, no matter how moral or cultural you might moral or cultural disagreements with those things, that's the place to hash it all out. That's my take on what those places represent. They do not represent that in America right now. There's so much partisan bias nonsense going on there. But that's what they should be, ideally. My hot take on that. Speaking of, Xion, what do you think about the battle between First Amendment rights and how it relates to the right to defame someone? All right. Now, in the battle and marketplace of ideas, no one has the right to purposefully manipulate or deceive other people. Chew on that one for a little while, right? You don't have the right to do that. You have the right to your own ideas. You have the right to express your ideas. You do not have the right to lie to people, especially destructive lies, right? Especially bullshit, like, you know, the crap that gets thrown around daily in our marketplaces of ideas called the social media, right? So it's not a right, it's a privilege, right? For you to be able to lie. And so you have, so because I don't think you have the right to slander or libel someone, in other words, which would be pretty gross examples of lying, you just don't have the right to do that. And the problem is not our First Amendment rights. The problem is our inability to access the justice system, whether civil or criminal, so that we can take those people to task when they do lie about us, whether you, me, or thee, right? Whoever we're talking about, we don't have access to any of the mechanisms to bring to justice people who do that maliciously. Go try to go take a cyber stalker to get a restraining order. Not even a criminal charge, just to get a restraining order against them. A cease and desist to stop lying about me. Good fucking luck. Good fucking luck. Right? If you don't have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to just throw into a fireplace, because that's where it's going, to try to prosecute or stop someone who is libeling and slandering you, you don't have access to that. Regular people don't. And that is the problem. The problem is not what people, you know, get on a riff about saying. The problem is trying to challenge them about that and getting them to stop maliciously taking you apart. You have no recourse, right? Except what you can find yourself by doing the same, going out in the marketplace of ideas, the public forums, and lobbing missiles in their direction. And what kind of choice is that? Not much of one, to be honest, right? Because we're not, it's not an even playing field. Never has been, never will be, right? And that's a challenge. That's a serious, serious challenge. Because if you, for example, if you're me and you want to take on, you know, someone else who's absolutely straight up lying about you, and they're a significantly larger presence and have a significantly larger audience, the second you open your mouth, that whole audience comes and attacks you. And what are you supposed to do about that, right? How are you supposed to deal with that? You can't. It's overwhelming. I've been in that position far too many times. And I would never wish that on anybody, right? That shouldn't be the standard punishment for going out and trying to help people or share your ideas. Of course, I'm, you know, a little hung up on me right now, but that's not just me who's in that position by a long shot. By a long shot, right? So people can argue and yell and scream about their First Amendment right to tear apart other people and character assassinate them all day long and act very maliciously and very viciously towards other people, and they have the right to do that, but they don't really have the right to do that, but we have no recourse to get them to stop. That's my point here in answering this question is their rights become a privilege and an abuse, right? It's not a right anymore. It becomes an abusive method, an abusive action. And anyway, there's just nothing you can really do about that the way we have things structured now. That's the plain truth of it, and it's very, very frustrating. All right. Okay, we are almost there. Oh, BG Foster, I have to admit something right now. I went and read the article on Mike's blog about this new FEBC org board that has been instituted by this new training thing, but I haven't looked at what the changed org board is yet, so I need to actually get my hands on it, because I don't remember what the hell this restored FEBC org board consists of. I know it doesn't change the basic seven division structure, but that's fine. Let me take a look at it and get back to you on this one. Do I think if it's what I think it is, this probably sounds like a reasonable question. Yeah, Miscavige could be trying to reorganize things so that he can get, less done with less people, right? It certainly isn't going to help. Let me be clear about this. Regardless of what is or isn't on this FEBC org board, let me be clear. L. Ron Hubbard couldn't organize his way out of a wet paper bag, okay? The guy was horrible at organizing people to get work done. The only work that gets done in Scientology gets done by people who bypass Hubbard's bullshit, not commit to it. So there is that. Oh no, this is a great question, Joe. Thank you for asking this. Why do many cults think they are in some equivalent of the film The Matrix? You mentioned it, and my cult thought exactly the same. Or was it just that era of pop culture, and now it's some other film? There will be more films that will take the place of The Matrix, but let's be clear. The Matrix was the perfect cult us versus them analogy. The small group of, before The Matrix, we compared ourselves to Jedi Knights and Star Wars. Any concept of a small group of freedom fighters fighting against the big oppressive masses, is a fitting analogy to how cult members think of themselves almost across the boards. They see themselves as the small, plucky band of adventurers and heroes and freedom fighters that is taking on the Empire or the Imperium or the vast AI computer network, right? The oppressive authority. However you define oppressive authority, 1984, right? That big brother, we're fighting them. They're trying to squash us into non-existence, and we're fighting the good fight against that and freeing people from that oppression. That shit's as old as time itself, right? That is the oppressed minority making themselves out to be the heroes of their story against the oppressive majority, no matter what the majority is or says or does. It really isn't always true that the minority are the good guys and the majority are the bad guys. But this model of thinking, you know, lines up with cults 100% because cults generally are your formative groups. And when a group is formative, it is very defensive. It is very unsure of its place in the world. It's got to be, it's got to set its flag and make a strong stand and draw people to it and us versus them the hell out of that, right? So that this group has solidarity and strength and unity and certainty in its own self and cause. And that's what gives it the strength and power to draw more people to it, gain resources, and build itself up. This is how you do it, right? Is you rile people up around the common cause of we're the fighting elite pushing back against the oppressive majority, okay? Typical modeling for that situation, and that's why. Okay, rhyme and reason. We're going to go for another few minutes, and I'm going to wrap up, okay? Rhyme and reason. Can you request to be posted in a specific org that interests you in the Sea Org? Yes, you can request that. It doesn't mean you're going to get it, but you can certainly try. And some people do very, very much want to go, say, to Gold and make films, or they want to work here, they want to work there in computer programming, something like that. There are qualifications they usually have to fulfill. Sometimes that involves getting a production record or showing a good ethics record or. And so they have to, you know, jump through those hoops to get where they want to go. But yes, you can do that in the Sea Org. Jehovah's Witness apostate, are they still serving eggs and beans and rice at the Sea Org? Yeah, I assume they are. Yeah. Jehovah's Witness apostate, can the average person pay to eat at the Scientology galley in Los Angeles? Yeah, it's called eating at the Pacifica Cafe because the food in the cafe is made in the galley, which is literally on the other side of the door. So you got the galley as this big kitchen facility, industrial size kind of thing to feed the crew. And then they also make all the food or a bunch of the food that goes over into the cafe, which the public pay for. And that's one of the ways that the galley makes income for itself to feed the crew is through feeding the public. So yeah, they get that food. Usually, of course, for the public, it's prettied up a bit and they make it nicer than they do for the crew. Yeah. Young Matador, I understand that every Church of Scientology has an office set aside for LRH. Is anyone ever allowed in these offices to work, or are they for display purposes only? It is a display museum quality piece of an org for L. Ron Hubbard's office. Nobody goes in there and works. Absolutely not. It would be completely verboten. It's to dis- and there's usually a rail or a separator, you know, to keep people out of the LRH office. The only person who goes in there is the person whose job is called the LRH communicator, and their job is to keep that office clean and tidy and kept up with all the supplies and everything that's supposed to be in there. There's a whole checklist of stuff to put in there, and they have to keep that up, and that's the Hubbard office. All right. Whoa, what's this now? Xion, have you seen the TV commercials about Echinar? What do you think about them? I have not seen those TV commercials. Echinar? Sounds like a cult. Echincar? that's a weird name. Anyway, no, I don't. I have not seen those. I'll have to check those out. Oh, yeah, Joe DiCeppo, if someone writes a KR on you and you get interrogated over it, do you have to pay for your own interrogation? Do people ever try to financially ruin people they don't like by doing this? No. You have to pay for your own security checking. Ethics interviews, ethics officer functions with you are free. They don't charge for that. I've never seen anybody charge for an ethics, what would be called an ethics cycle. It's usually part of your services, or if you're a Scientologist and the church has a problem with you, they'll call you in and sit you down and talk to you. That is free. There's no charge for that. When they put you on the meter for a security check is when they start charging you, because that's an auditor's time, and a case supervisor has to supervise that. So that's what you're paying for. Ethics interviews, even on the e-meter, are not charged for. Formalized security checking is what you pay for, and you can be ordered to a sec check. It's not something that, and then you'd have to pay for it. Anyway, yeah, so there you go. What current red pill, what current fashion trends do you not like? Also, do you lift weights? fashion trends. Oh, I don't like those super long nails that women have, right? They paint them very intricately and very nicely, but they will have these 3-inch long, 4-inch long nails, fingernails. How do you get anything done? I don't even understand it. They're really long, like claws. I think that's weird. I don't like that too much. I also don't like some of the stuff that women do with their eyes. They kind of do this, anyway, I don't know how to describe it. They basically take off their eyebrows. They're like gone. It's, and then they paint them on or something. It's weird. I don't really like that very much. I do not lift weights. No, I don't. I don't. Do I look like I lift weights? No. Okay. Jehovah's Witness apostate. Have you lost, hold friends or supporters because of the division? Do you think it will get worse? Yes, I have lost supporters and friends over the divisions in the Scientology space these days. I've lost quite a few, actually. It's been very, like I said, disappointing and disheartening to see that happen, right? To watch people just abandon you overnight because of somebody else calling you names or saying things about you that aren't true. I find that very, very disappointing. Do I think it's going to get worse? No, I think I've been through the worst of it now. In fact, I'm sure I have been. So I don't see it getting worse for me necessarily. I'm not trying and talking about this stuff today to get down into the mud and sling insults around. You notice I haven't said one person's name. I'm not talking about other creators or other people. I'm talking about a general situation. And I rue the entire... There's a word I don't get to use very often. I rue the overall situation. You know, I think it sucks that creators are making money and getting support and subscribers and building a life and a channel around tearing other people down who are just trying to help. I think that is evil. That's what I think. I think it's horrible. I think it's the opposite of help. And I think it's the opposite of what this community and what people in the ex-cult space need, right? I think it actually is destructive to a healing community to act that way. And it rankles me right? That it's not only happening, but that's the popular thing to do. That's what people want in this space, is to watch more of that. Wow. You know, we're the Kardashians now. That's what this space is. The Kardashians. Jersey Shore. Right? And I can tell you, and I'm going to say this out loud because it needs to be said out loud, that this repels ex-cult members, that people looking for help, looking for a sane, rational voice, see this going on in this space and run from it. This is the exact opposite of a helpful space for people who need help. This whole conflict and name calling and constant tearing down of other people, as though this is a morally righteous crusade, right? I need to tear down the Aftermath Foundation. I have to tear these destructive, horrible people down, right? The exact same people who were helped. It's horrifying. It's awful. So that's what it is. Clearwater Shore. Exactly. Alex, thank you. Thank you for saying that, because you're absolutely right. What this has done is it has unified some of us, and it has made some of us much more sure about our roles in all of this, right? Because we're not going to go down and get into the mud about this, and we're not going to be part of that. We are doing the work. And when I talk about doing the work, I'm talking about what I do off camera. I'm not talking about this. I do my very, very best to educate as best I know how. That's all I'm really trying to do here. And off the camera, I try to consult with people and I try to help them directly one-on-one, right? Whether it's a family member of somebody who's still in a Scientology or still in some cult, whether it's a friend of somebody who's desperate to help their friend out, or whether it's somebody who's gotten out of a cult situation or coercive situation and just needs a helpful ear, an understanding ear, some guidance, some education, I'm there for them. And to be torn down for that, to be called a fake and a fraud, you know, it's like, what the hell, right? That's not what any of this is about. This is about helping people and assisting people to get on with their life, whatever that means for them. How is that so bad? How is that suddenly like horrible, right? So it really has created some separation between those of us who are actually trying to do this work and those who just want to tear people down. And that's kind of the most basic way I can describe how I see it. You know, that's how I see it. I'm not even going to give that concession. I'm not delusional. I'm not seeing things wrong. I'm not off in some left field. And anybody who thinks I am, I don't know what to say, right? I know what I spend my time doing. I know what Alex spends his time doing. I know what Jeff spends his time doing. I know what the AF Aftermath guys spend their time doing. And it's not all this crap, right? So I think in a way it's getting more clarified, and maybe we needed to do this. Maybe this needed to happen in a way so that we could separate the wheat from the chaff or something. I don't know. I don't have my finger on the pulse of objective truth. You know, I'm only making my way through all of this as well as anybody else is. So, you know, people are going to have opinions, and that's the way it is, right? So that's what I can say about that. But no, I don't think it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get better. And I think that those of us who are united in this to get that work done are more dedicated to what we're trying to do now than we ever have been. So in a way, maybe it helped. How's that? Yeah, right? Like I said the other night when I was talking about resilience, and boy, more of y'all need to watch that show because there's going to be a lot more on that. Resilience is important. We talk about trauma all the time. we need to talk about getting over trauma and resilience a lot more, because that's the goal. That's where we're trying to go, at least as far as I'm concerned. And what did I talk about in resilience, right? Overcoming challenges, meeting those challenges, dealing with them, and moving on. And that's kind of how I think about all of this stuff that's going on. You'll see some angst and some like, you know, I almost said chewing the carpet. Anyway, you'll see me get really upset sometimes, right? But I think we're fighting and we're winning. That's what I think. I think what we're doing has lasting value. And I think it's going to persist through time. That's what I think. Okay. So there we go. And on that, I think it's time to wrap up. I've reached the end of my my question queue anyway. And we are an hour and a half into this. We've been going for a little bit. I am enjoying the hell out of doing these live streams with you guys. I want to thank you for all of your support and well wishes and everything. I was only glancing a little bit at the non-question queue. So I'll have to take a look at that after and make sure I didn't miss anything important. But thank you very much for your viewership and your support. I want to ask anybody out there who's watching who does care about me and care about the work that we're doing here to please sign up with Patreon and support my channel. There has been definite loss there because of all of this division and nonsense, and I'd love to build that back up again. And all the work that I'm doing is moving in that direction, right? Of, again, trying to help and support and assist people. I think that's worth something. And I think I should be helped in that, right? So if you want to help me, Patreon is a great way to do that. You can also support me through Buy Me a Coffee, through Venmo, PayPal, etc. There's links to all of this stuff below. It's always there for you. And I hope you'll do that. And of course, you've always got my publication to read, Scientology A to Xenu, a book that is absolutely going to inform you very, very, very well about Scientology A to Xenu. All right. So on that happy note, guys, I will see you guys tomorrow for Scientology, after Scientology Straight Up and Vertical with Tony. And otherwise, I will see you probably next Friday. I don't think we're going to be doing any live streams this week. I've got a lot of work to get into now that we're coming into April to get this get the metering video finalized and put together for you for the end of April. Mark your calendar, because the last day of April, we're doing that live stream. And you're going to get, finally, going to get the rundown on the Scientology e-meter. All right. I will see you guys soon. Bye-bye.